The House will come to order. Members of the House, we are at that order of business of signing of enrolled acts. The first enrolled act will be House Enrolled Act 19. The reading clerk will read the enrolled act.
House Enrolled Act 19, being original House Bill number 54, an act relating to taxation and revenue, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act number 19, being original House Bill 54. I have so signed. Congratulations, Chairman Anderson. The next House Enrolled Act will be number 20.
House Enrolled Act number 20, being original House Bill number 67, an act relating to education, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act number 20, being original House Bill 67. I have so signed. The next House Enrolled Act will be number 21.
House Enrolled Act number 21, being original House Bill 77, an act relating to education, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act number 21, being original House Bill 77. I have so signed. The next House Enrolled Act will be number 22.
House Enrolled Act number 22, being original House Bill number 88, an act relating to water development projects, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act number 22, being original House Bill 88. I have so signed. The next House Enrolled Act will be number 23.
House Enrolled Act number 23, being original House Bill number 91, an act relating to sales and use tax, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act number 23, being original House Bill number 91. I have so signed. The next House Enrolled Act will be number 24.
House Enrolled Act number 24, being original House Bill number 122, an act relating to crimes and offenses, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act number 24, being original House Bill 122. I have so signed. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 203, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 6, State Veterans Museum, the House bill listed below, passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 23, noes 5, excused 2. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 204, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 8, Election Code Revisions. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 28, excused 2. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 205, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 54, Natural Gas Valuation. Ayes 27, noes 1, excused 2. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 206, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 77, Tuition Dependents of Disabled Firefighters and EMTs. Ayes 28, excused 2. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 207, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 88, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. Ayes 28, excused 2. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 208, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 90, Carbon Capture and Sequestration. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 27, noes 1, excused 2. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 209. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 91, Streamline Sales and Use Tax. Ayes 25, noes 3, excused 2. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 210. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 122, Game Wardens, Enforcement of Littering Provisions. Ayes 25, noes 3, excused 2. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 211. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 67, Intertribal Education and Community Service. Ayes 20, noes 8, excused 2. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Members of the House, the Conference Committee appointments to Senate File 44. Representative Lockhart, Chair. Representative Simpson. Representative Stubson. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You have heard the motion. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Representative Harvey.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 28. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 28, introduced by Capital Financing, an act relating to public funds regarding investment of state funds revisions. This bill was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Anderson, Escobel, Kay, Gilmore, Madden, Miller, Semlek, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dave. No, Lubno.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 28 do pass, and I further recommend the adoption of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 28. That corrected copy that you have deals with page 27 and 28, the portion of that legislation that we didn't think was necessary. I want to remind you that this is a revision, and the whole statute, or that portion of the statute, comes out of the bill. But it remains in the statutes except for those underlined portions on page 28. There's no questions on that. I call for the question.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment and question having been called. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I turn the explanation over the bill to the good chairman of the Capital Investments and Funds.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It thrills me to no end to be able to explain Senate File 28 to you this morning, or this afternoon, I should say. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a handout, two-pager, that came out to you over lunch. That indicates that it is a summary of SF 28. This bill is a consolidation and rearranging of the state investment statute. It removes conflicting, redundant, and unclear provisions and replaces numerous cross-reference provisions with fewer statutes. It's not solely a reviser-type bill because it does have some substantive changes, and those are identified in the summary sheet. The first one is permanent funds. The definition of permanent funds has been amended to remove reserve accounts from that definition, and those reserve accounts are from the Common and School account and the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. The Treasurer's Office has not treated those as permanent funds, and based on the use of the funds, they do not appear to be permanent funds until the overflow money pours back into the corpus of those accounts. And the effect of the change is that the funds in the reserve accounts can't be invested in equities as only permanent funds may be, and other constitutionally designated funds. Page 3 of the bill goes in and talks about authorized investments. The Treasurer's obligation is to comply with the constitutional limitations and the prudent investor requirements that are set out in 410.901. That's the prudent investor rule. And to obtain the approval of the State Land and Investment Board, the SLIB Board, or as the legislature may authorize. And rather than removing the Treasurer from the statutory listing, we retained the language but broadened and clarified the general investment authority language. Rather than listing or referencing listings of authorized securities or other investments, the bill provides authority to invest if the investment, and this is not just securities, is authorized by law or authorized or approved by the SLIB Board. The investments would be subject to state investment policies and the Prudent Investor Act, as discussed. And the Treasurer would still need approval of SLIB to invest in alternative investments. And you can see that at the bottom of page 3. The Prudent Investor Rule on page 4 of the bill, there was language in the old statute indicating that there could be exceptions as authorized by law to that rule, and we wanted to take those out. We did that, and the language indicating that individual investments are not to be judged standing alone, but in the context of investment policies for the entire trust or the trust fund was retained, and that's page 4, line 21. Legislatively designated investments, LDIs, this goes to page 12 of the bill, lines 4 through 12. The current law contains a number of legislatively designated investments and a cap of $500 million on all LDIs. Under current law, unless an LDI is specifically excluded from the cap, it is counted towards the cap. And this bill contains a separate laundry list of, well, no, we repealed the laundry list of LDIs and replaced it with more general language, capping investments for a specific public purpose at $500 million, the same as current law. The one LDI excluded from the cap are bonds of the Infrastructure Authority. And this is the same as the current law adopted when the Infrastructure Authority was created in 2004. Investment managers are discussed on page 17. There are three changes made in this section. The first appears on page 8, line 18, line 2. And the language on that line is new, which means the previous absolute restrictions found on page 18, lines 4 through 15, are subject to exceptions authorized by the SLIB Board, and I'm sure you were wondering about that. The second insertion on line 13 of managed by such investment manager, and that narrows the prohibition of subparagraph B. The third is a deletion of, quote, with approval of the SLIB from the language on page 20, lines 19 and 20. And that talks about contracting for services to select an investment manager. Investments generally, page 21, line 19. This change appears throughout the section amending current law. It reflects the general investment change noted with regard to investments. It must be authorized by law or authorized or approved by SLIB, are subject to the prudent investor rule, and are to be judged by the entire portfolio and purposes underlying the fund, not by a single investment. You take a more global view. Farm loans are on page 27, line 2 of the bill. The statute did contain many cross-references between the investment statutes in Title IX and farm loan statutes in Title XI, and this bill consolidates them by moving them to Title XI. In doing so, some inconsistencies appeared, and we're clearing those up. And these were resolved by repealing or conforming provisions. Then repealers, most of the repealers deal with archaic language. Some deal with executed and sunsetted LDIs. The most significant deal with current statutes containing restrictions and limitations on investing through mutual funds and commingled funds. The Treasurer's Office asks that these restrictions be removed, as many investments today, including both traditional and alternative investments, involve the use of commingled funds that are not held by a trust company or a trust department of a bank, and this legislation removes these requirements. And if you'd like a more detailed explanation of the bill, Representative from Cheyenne, I'm sure one of them will be happy to meet with you after the session today. Madam Chairman, that is the bill. I'd stand for any questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Anderson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 28 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 28 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 56. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 56, introduced by the Select Water Committee, an act relating to water development projects. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Brechtel, Dirks, Edmonds, Samuelson, Semlich, Teeters, Wallace, Wanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Samuelson, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Samuelson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 56 do pass, and the good representative that is from District 2 and the Vice Chairman of the Ag Committee will explain the bill, and to assist him is also the representative from District 10.
Representative Dirks.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move Senate File 56, Omnibus Water Bill Construction. Members of the House, this is the second water bill that you'll see. Every year we have the planning bill and the construction bill. This one has gone through a similar process of having the Wyoming Water Development Commission take all these proposals, weigh them over, consider them, and then decide whether to grant them. And then again, the Select Water Committee reviews them, and then the Agriculture Committee of both houses takes a look at them. And you can see the various projects and the grant loan combinations, and the chairman of the Select Water Committee will edify us further. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The representative that's on the water, Select Water, did explain, if you look at your cheat sheet, it kind of describes all the construction projects in there. If you want further detail, you get a hold of a book like this, and it goes into detail on every one of those projects. That's identified there by the tab number on the face of the explanation sheet, and over there on the top it says WDA1, WDA2. That's Water Development Account 1, Water Development Account 2. Some of the things that we do, if you want to turn over to your second page, you look at the top of there. It says tab N, and that is a water project for Torrington. And some of the things that the criteria that goes to meet that is listed in the book. Such things as does the municipality serve more than 20 taps? One of the criteria, if there's less than 20 taps, they will not qualify for this. Are there meters there for billing? Is it their system in a health and safety risk? In the bottom of the page, it says, what's the average cost of living index, medium household income, monthly water bill, water bill as a percent of the income. All those things go into the criteria before one of these loans come out. And then if you want further information, this legislative report is also out. That'll give you such vital information as there's 18 million acre feet of water that leave fall on Wyoming or are stored in Wyoming every year on an annual basis. There's still 1.4 million acre feet of unappropriated water, and all the projects that have been throughout the since the inception of this program. Those are some of the things that y'all need to learn, but they are available to you. If there are any questions, we'd be sure be willing to try to answer them.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Madam Chairman, I just need to declare a conflict of interest on this bill.
Madam Chairman, we're always glad to see somebody that won't drink water.
Is there any further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Samuelson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 56 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Representative Edmonds.
Madam Chairman, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Thank you. Members of the 59th, I would just like to take a moment for all of you to introduce you to actually two men. One of them doesn't know I'm going to introduce him, but two men in the gallery. One has been a great inspiration to me in my walk in the political life, someone who has been a mentor, has done many wonderful things. The other one is the love of my life. The first one, Jack Mueller. The second one, my husband, Harlan Edmonds.
Welcome to the House. The next bill for our consideration will be Senate File 53. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 53, introduced by the Appropriation Committee, an act relating to public funds regarding common school reserve account funding. This bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Jones, Jorgensen, Peterson, Philp, Warren. Signed, Representative Philp, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Philp?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a due pass recommendation for Senate File 53. There are no standing committee amendments, and I will refer the bill to the good representative from Natrona County to explain the bill.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, Senate File 53 accomplishes a pretty simple goal in that for the past several years, 7-8 years since we've instituted a spending policy, we have inflation-proofed or built the reserve account of the Common School Permanent Land Income Fund with general fund monies. And you can see that on your goldenrod. There's an auto appropriation, one to the Permanent Mineral Trust, one to the Common School Permanent Land Income Fund. Part of that has been our constitution and the way it's written, where all earnings from the Common School has to go to the school foundation to support schools. And part of it was just a financial, at the beginning, 8 years ago when this was set up, was just it was easier to take it out of general fund because there wasn't any money in the school foundation account. Well, at this point now, with the Hathaway being full here by the time we leave, we are basically now going to intercept some of the federal mineral royalty flows, the one-third over the $200 million cap that flows to the school foundation program. We will make that auto appropriation out of those FMR flows. So the flows that filled the Hathaway will divert, you know, $50, $60 million a year to the reserve account, whatever that... You know, it's the difference between the earnings and the spending policy account. And I know that sounds complicated, but basically we're moving the inflation proofing from the general fund monies to school foundation monies. And, it's really that simple. FMR flows. So if there are not any further questions, sir, I'd stand for questions, Madam Chair.
Chairman McComey.
Well, I think maybe there are
there was a misstatement. It really isn't money that comes from the Hathaway. It's FMRs that were coming into the fund and just flowing to the Hathaway. But so it doesn't really have that much to do with the Hathaway. I really don't think so anyway.
Madam Chair, actually, if you look at the flow charts, the Hathaway is a box that, off of the FMRs. And that's after we've paid for school, all our school bills, and keep a $100 million balance. The Hathaway boxes will virtually disappear after this session because it will be full. This really puts this inflation-proofing box of FMRs in place of the Hathaway. It is really that simple. So we're just swapping those in because the Hathaway is done. We filled it up faster than we ever imagined. So it'll free up, the net effect, it'll free up some general fund money as well. Question?
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Phelps' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 53 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 53 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 71. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 71, introduced by Senator Schiffer, an act relating to the Hathaway Scholarship Program. This bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Goggles, Yeagy, McComey, Teeters, Wallace, White. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman McComey?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Report rises to report, the Committee of the Whole rises to report, excuse me, that it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 71 do pass, and I further move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I would like to divide the Standing Committee Amendment. I like the first division to be line 22 and line 44. And ladies and gentlemen, what this division does, there are no such thing as certified sign language teachers. This strikes the word certified and just talks about sign language teachers. And with that, I'd call for the question.
Question having been called on Division 1, which is line 22 and line 44. Those in favor of that amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That part of the amendment has passed. We're back on the amendment.
Madam Chairman, the rest of the amendment would be Section 2. And at the proper time, I'd ask the bringer of that amendment to the committee to explain it. However, the bill should be explained now by the good majority floor leader, who is a sponsor in the House. And at that time, we'll talk about the rest of the amendment.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Sign language is the fourth most common language in the United States. And this bill simply indicates that sign language can help meet your success curriculum requirements as a student who is attempting to qualify for the Hathaway Scholarship. It breaks it down because we're starting up the Hathaway over the last couple of years. So the first subsection B is addressing the success curriculum for students graduating in 2010 and 2011, and they would need 2 years of instruction in American Sign Language. And then subsection C, those graduating prior to 2010 and 2011 need 1 year. And then subsection D on page 3 references the Opportunity Scholarship for those graduating in 2010 and 2011. And subsection E is the career scholarship eligibility for those graduating in 2010 and 2011. And it's, you know, it's either 2 years or 1 year of the American Sign Language. We have quite a few interpreters in Wyoming, but very few instructors who can actually instruct students. Some of the colleges do teach American Sign Language, and our education department is working with the Professional Teaching Standards Board to determine the standards for a teacher of American Sign Language. And because it is very difficult for a student who cannot speak or cannot hear to learn a foreign language, it would be like learning a foreign language through sign language. That would be very difficult to do. So sign language is a very important element in our society for people to be able to communicate, and we simply ask that it be included in the Hathaway Success curriculum. It's taught at the University of Wyoming and Laramie County Community College, Northwest Community College, Northern Wyoming, Western Wyoming, and all offer sign language courses. Laramie County, Northwest, and UW allow their students to use sign language courses as a way to obtain credit as an alternative foreign language. And the university is in support of this amendment, and I would ask you to please support the concept. It had good support in committee. And the remainder of the standing committee amendment really has nothing to do with the issue of American Sign Language being included in the success curriculum. Not to say that it doesn't have merit, but just remember what the intent of the bill is, and the bringer of the remainder of the standing committee amendment will tell you why he is bringing that amendment, but this bill is quite simple as it stands alone. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the words of the majority floor leader, and this is a good bill, and I'd encourage you to support it. I brought an amendment to the Education Committee, and I appreciate their support and including it as a standing committee amendment. Well, I'll just give you the quick problem. Most of the kids in this state, the kids in your district, in high school, ninth grade, starting ninth grade, take a course called physical science. Cheyenne, Casper, Gillette, you name it. Douglas, I talked to all these superintendents. I think most of the kids see in Natrona County, we used to teach a class called earth science in ninth grade. We changed back in 2000 to kind of align with the rest of the state and align with state standards. Okay, now just hitting your tray is a one-pager, and it's got an arrow there at this kind of the 2 inches from the top, points to the science courses. Now, I chaired the select committee on the Hathaway Scholarship. We spent a lot of time on the success curriculum. I distinctly remember this. It occurred in the student union at Casper College for a day-long discussion, and what you have there is really, you have several courses listed, physics 1 and 2, chemistry 1 and 2, biology 1 and 2, geology, computer science, and then J, an additional science course. Everybody can see that. Well, our question during the select committee was, well, what about biochem? Well, we can work through that through functional equivalence and through rule and reg. Because physical science, what I just explained to you, a ninth grade course that's taught all over the state of Wyoming, is half physics, half chemistry. But see, the qualifications to qualify for one of these courses has to be a year-long course of study. Well, so I've been on this deal since last spring. And I talked to the department and went through talking to school districts. And I was assured in a conference call when I was down here for appropriations that week in December and January, I said, do I need to bring a bill? Should I bring a bill? No, we think we can work this through rule and reg. So I didn't bring a bill because it wasn't my intent to open up the success curricula again and do all that. So I just sat, and then I got an email 2 days ago that physical science will not count. And remember, most of our kids are taking this. It will not count as one of these other, either as a physics or a chemistry, but it could count as the other science. Well, that's fine, but I got that memo 2 days ago that they have to follow the, quote, letter of the law. And you can see the letter of the law in there. Well, the problem is this. All our kids take physical science ninth grade. Then they'll take a biology or chemistry. That's three of their 4 years. And then their fourth year, we're trying to get a lot of kids on career ladders. So kids don't have to now take a fourth year of science, but they will in the full implementation of the success curriculum. So we offer like allied health classes, you know, where kids are, it's a science credit. We're trying to get them, if they want to get into the nursing or the med tech professions, get them in that way. The anatomy, biology, kinesiology, different types, more advanced stuff. And the problem is that like a med tech class, it doesn't fit under any of those definitions either. And so it would count. So basically you have two other science classes. Well, the statutes only allow for one additional science. So by listing out these specific courses, we in fact kind of narrowed our reach on this. And so, we had this discussion for hours, biochem, you know, physical science, all that. And we were assured that it could accomplish this through rule and reg. So I didn't bring a bill, got the memo. I looked for a vehicle to fix this problem because it's a real problem. There's more kids involved in this, certainly, in American Sign Language. I'm all for it. Don't get me wrong, but it's more kids involved, certainly going to get caught in this trap than through American Sign Language. So I really encourage your support to fix this deal. I think it's something that needs fixed. I wouldn't bring it just, you know, we went through excruciating negotiations last year on the success curricula. Chairman McComin, Representative Teeters, and I were on that conference and I think struck a good deal. But this is a real problem. And so I'd stand for any questions and I'd encourage your support of this division of the Standing Committee Amendment and of the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there any further discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment?
Question.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Question having been called, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative McComey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 71 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 71 passes the Committee of the Whole. Representative Goggles.
Madam Chairperson, privilege of the floor.
Yes, you may.
Members of the 59th, from the land of the chiefs, you might say. With us today, to my left, is my wife of 34 years, my sister-in-law of 34 years. both are graduates of the University of Wyoming, and both are teachers at Wyoming Indian Elementary School, and my granddaughters, which I want to tell, a woman's place is in the House and the Senate. Let's welcome them.
Welcome to the House of Representatives. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 38. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 38, introduced by Senator Case, an act relating to descriptive terms for persons with cognitive deficiencies. This bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Goggles, Yeagy, McComey, Teeters, Wallace, White, signed Representative McComey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman McComey?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 38 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And, Madam Chairman, I would like to explain the Standing Committee Amendment. These Ladies and gentlemen of the 59th, these are technical corrections. When we've drafted this bill, it talks in the bill, and as will be explained, we're making changes to the statutes throughout the statutes to use language, change some language that the way they're used. And another one, we have a bill moving, I think it was heard today in the Joint Labor Committee or the Labor Committee, dealing with the Wyoming Training School and some of the language in that. And that had, this amendment also makes the technical corrections in the forthcoming legislation should it pass. And I'd move, I'd entertain the question on the bill, on the amendment.
Question having been called, all those in favor of, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee amendment passes.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to turn the explanation of the bill over to the House's sponsor, and I believe she may even have some help from some other people in here. It's a very good bill. Very proud to see it.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This really is a day of celebration. We talked earlier this morning about the state of equality, and I'm very honored to present this bill to you, People First Language. When you look at the first page of the bill, you will see all of these changes to the statute. And that happened because of our Select Committee on Developmental Disabilities. As we've been working with the training school, as we've been working with legislation to promote and take care of the needs of those that have disabilities, we have discovered that we have not changed the language. And so I hope today is the last time that I say mental retardation, and that this is what the bill is about. It's changing that language, changing those definitions, so that we now have it to read intellectual disabilities. It also has other terms in it, and I'm greatly here to say that we are new definitions for our statutes dealing with these disabilities. We are changing it also so that we had emotionally disturbed on page 9. It is now going to be serious emotional disabilities. These folks have rights, and I am excited to have them on the same playing field with us today, and that we've modernized this language, and I ask for your support and stand for question.
Is there any further discussion? We have Representative Goggles. Gingrey. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question, but maybe I just misunderstood the Standing Committee amendment, and I went and found the corrected copy one, but you just said that on page 9 we're changing seriously emotionally disturbed youth to seriously emotionally disabilities, but it appeared the Standing Committee amendment deleted all of that. I was just curious if that was meant to be deleted out of the bill, or I didn't quite, and I guess it's a little late to be asking about the Standing Committee amendment, but quite a few of these were left in. I was just curious why they got left in.
Madam Chairman?
Chairman McComey?
I believe this language is already in the new bill coming through the maybe it isn't in there. The Madam Chairman, who was responsible for that bill, was shaking her head no. So I don't know the answer to that. I'll have to check with the staff. They're the ones that brought the technical corrections to me. I'll get an answer back to you, Representative from Jackson.
Representative Escobel.
Madam Chair, I would urge your favorable response to House Bill Senate File 38, and as a good representative from Sheridan mentioned, this is a change. It's a, but it's and as my good good friend, the chairman from the Education Committee, mentioned that there was a change in the statutes. There is a change in the statutes, but I think more importantly, there's a change in how we think and how we refer to certain individuals, a change in the way we think. And I think that's what People First was asking for, that they be viewed as people first, and the disability is, you know, just part of whom they are. But people first is to look at them as individuals. In addition, about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, there was a convention at a resort west of town, a fairly big convention. And one of the main speakers, I can't think of his name, but I'm sure he was paid some big bucks to be the main speaker. And basically what he talked about was words matter. And talked about how we phrase certain things and how we describe certain events or people really matters. And I think that's what this piece of legislation is referring to, that words matter. And I would encourage your favorable vote on this bill for People First. Thank you, Madam Chair.
We have a Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, Representative Swanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 38 and ask for its favorable introduction. I've been told this is a very friendly amendment to the bill. Basically, what we're doing in Senate File 38 is going through the statutes and changing, you know, where these offensive terms appear into better language. What we haven't done with this bill is go through the rules and regulations of these agencies as well and change those terms in the rules and regs. So in the amendment, it's 3 different parts, but it goes basically to the Department of Health, the Department of Family Services, and the Department of Workforce Services. And the next time they revisit their rules and regulations, it encourages them to make the same changes we're making here in statute. And I'd stand for any questions on the amendment.
The question being called, all those in favor of the committee of the whole amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Is there any question being called? All those in favor of Chairman McComey's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 38 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 38 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 27. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 27, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to counties regarding county nuisance abatement authority. This bill was referred to Committee No. 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Brechtel, Dirks, Edmonds, Samuelson, Simlek, Teeters, Wallace, Wanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Samuelson, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Samuelson?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File number 27 do pass. And the representative from District 42 will explain the bill.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This bill, Senate File 27, County Nuisance Abatement Authority, is a permissive piece of legislation which allows the county commissioners to abate what they determine is health and safety. And if you take a look at the bill, the entire crux of it is on page 2 and 3, and it says that the county commissioners in the organized counties, which we all have, may declare and abate nuisances which the commission determines to be a threat to health or safety through resolution. Language goes on, no person shall create, continue, or permit nuisances to exist in violation of a resolution adopted by a board of county commissioners pursuant to this paragraph. Any resolution passed by a Board of County Commissioners pursuant to this paragraph is enforceable, in addition to other remedies provided by law, by injunction, mandamus, or abatement. Whoever violates a resolution passed pursuant to this paragraph shall be fined not more than $750 for each offense. New language says, for the purposes of this paragraph, ongoing oil and gas development and mining at the location of their operations shall not be considered a nuisance. Nothing in this paragraph shall be construed to impair or modify any rights afforded to farm and ranch operations pursuant to the Wyoming Right to Farm and Ranch Act, which is found in 11-44-101. The language goes on and talks about, on page 3, nothing in this act shall be construed as to prevent any county from passing or enforcing any resolution regulating, restraining, or prohibiting nuisances which the commission determines to be a threat to health or safety. And that's the key of the entire bill. It's the commission determines to be a threat to health or safety. There is that problem here in Laramie County. There is one. There is and has been some of these problems throughout the state. The county commissioners have not had a real good way of cleaning up anything. According to their zoning authority, they only have authority to enforce ordinances, and this is one of those places where health and safety comes into effect, and this, those of us in Laramie County know of the place. It's just outside of the city limits. It's in the zoned area of the county. We've been trying to clean this up, particular area up, since about for about the last 10 years. It is between the zoning authority and the DEQ. It results from a dumping action back in 1972. There was a zoning exemption, but the dumping might have been fine, except they dumped asbestos. So it has gotten into be a real problem, and now it has become a threat to health or safety. And that's why this particular piece of legislation has been crafted, and it's been crafted carefully with the with our county attorney. And that's why those pieces about the Wyoming Farm and Ranch Act and oil and gas are noted on page 2. So I'll stand for questions.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Just a question on page 2. Again, he explained it, but it on line 13, it says, for the purposes of this paragraph, ongoing oil and gas development. The question is how about future development? Are we somehow condemning the mineral estate with this? I'm not sure exactly what this does.
Chairman Illaway.
Madam Chair. Before I answer that question, we were going to have, and there is a committee of the whole amendment that says after paragraph, which is on page 13, line 13, that we would insert permitted industrial facilities. And if the good representative from the center of the state thinks that something other than ongoing oil and gas, we felt that that was probably good enough. But if he thinks that there's a better word for ongoing, why, we would welcome that amendment on second reading.
Chairman Illaway, would you like, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Well, I'm sympathetic to the plight. I'm scared of the language on page 2, lines 2 and 3, where they can declare and abate nuisances which the commission determines to be a threat to health or safety through resolution. There's no public hearing process that I know of that's attached to that. There's no grandfathering that I can tell or that I'm aware of. I would think that other nuisance ordinances or statutes, and I haven't had a chance to research it, but would hold it to at least more of a due process standard. And it seems so broad. I mean, certainly asbestos is an obvious health issue, but that depends on what type of asbestos it is and who you talk to. I mean, frankly, that's true, and I'm not questioning that this one might be, but if I mow my lawn at 6 in the morning, is that a threat to the health and safety of my neighbor?
Yes.
It would be a definite threat to my health and safety, but I know this is in the county, Madam Chairman, and if I lived in the county next door to someone like a lot of people in Wyoming do, doesn't this just lead to kind of excessive complaints about how you don't like your neighbors and what they do and that it impairs your health? And it just seems too broad to me.
County, with the body's indulgence.
Chairman Illoway.
With the body's indulgence, Madam Chairman, I will read from our county attorney. First, the proposed law does not instantly create or mandate any nuisance, and we have said that there is no mandamus or anything. It says, first, the proposed law does not instantly create or mandate any nuisance, abatement requirement, or ability. The county commissioners who might act under this authority would have to do so in conformance with the provisions of the Administrative Procedures Act. This requires public meetings, notice, and comment on any proposed structure for nuisance abatement to be passed by the commission. Based on this county's prior experience, I can assure you that these meetings will be well attended and process will be extremely participatory. Any resulting nuisance abatement resolution will be the product of many minds and interests. The commissioners are in many ways, both actually and perceptively, the closest elected representative to the citizens. Judging by the volume of contacts from voters in regards to nuisance-related issues in our county, the commissioners are the first elected officials that get called. As a result, they are in good position to address these issues and to do so within the confines of the needs and sometimes conflicting interests of the citizens. It goes on. The good representative also talked about asbestos. It is friable asbestos. It has been proven by DEQ to be friable asbestos. It is moving down this particular area. It is a nuisance, and it is health and safety. Madam Chairman, I will move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, which is page 2, line 13, that says after paragraph we want to insert permitted industrial facilities. Call for the question.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, and the question having been called, all those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment passes. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Like the majority floor leader, I'm sympathetic to the plight, but concerned about the bill. And when we get to the subject of nuisances, one of the big concerns is the opportunity to be arbitrary and capricious. What's arbitrary and capricious means? It simply means that there's no standard, and that it's determination can vary from situation to situation, person to person, depending on whom it is, what it is, and where it is. Courts don't like arbitrary and capricious things, especially when it relates to the police power under the Constitution, which is, and the police power, health or safety is the police power. And let's think about the police power this way. If a city or town allows milk cows in town, and they decide at some point that it's a health hazard, then they, under the police power, health, safety, and welfare, they can outlaw it, and there's no grandfather rights. There's no grandfather rights because under the police power, there's an immediate right to abate that thing which is a threat to health or safety. Now, when you look at this thing and you look at the police power and what's going on here, I can't get by the fact that it's arbitrary and capricious. And then in looking at the statutes, I find 66201 through 66209, which has to do, which is a chapter that addresses nuisances and how they can be abated, and gives the county attorney or any citizen of the county standing to proceed in the name of the state of Wyoming on relation of the county attorney or a citizen to enjoin a nuisance, and provides for a trial and defines what a nuisance is. And I'll admit that the definition of nuisance in there is not, would not include the things that they're talking about, but I'm wondering why they just don't bring a bill to amend the definition of a public nuisance and give this thing some due process. Instead of being arbitrary and capricious, give it a standard as to what a nuisance is and some due process, which under the Fifth Amendment due process, procedural due process, means notice and an opportunity to be heard. And I would submit to you that that's the way it ought to be done. So while I am sympathetic to the plight and I understand the problem and agree it needs to be dealt with, I could not support this bill. Thank you.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. With all due respect to the good attorney from Albany County, this bill is not broad. It requires counties to adopt nuisance resolutions. There will be notice. There will be standards. It's not open-ended. It has to relate to health and safety. And wouldn't we rather have that as something of local control and local aesthetics, local desires, rather than legislating it from here? And the nuisance statute that's on the books now refers to whoever maintains, uses, owns, or leases any structure, boat, or vehicle for the purposes of lewdness, assignation, prostitution, or gambling, etc. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about health and safety nuisances. The counties need this authority to protect our communities. Or alternatively, we could put it all in the Environmental Quality Act, and oh, wouldn't that be better? Thank you.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question, perhaps. It says there, I know they just stuck in the permitted industrial facilities. My concern would be the language ongoing oil and gas development. Not to say that any of your counties would, but I could see my county doing this. The way that's worded, our county could easily put in, you know, oil and gas is now forbidden because it's ongoing. You might want to consider a second reading amendment permitted oil and gas development rather than that you're already in place. That's just an idea on that one. But more importantly, what I would point out is that I think we studied this, I don't know, 3 years ago, an interim study. The idea of county governments, because a lot of people are always a little surprised when they learn how little powers counties have. Really, the only powers they have are through their zoning powers, and if you don't have zoning, really the county government has very little power over their lands. And almost all the states, and I'm pretty sure all of them, except maybe Montana, no, Montana does too, have ordinance powers, just like your cities. And that would probably be the better direction to start going toward is looking at giving our counties the power of ordinance. So then you have a due process procedure. You know, they do three readings of an ordinance and they pass an ordinance. And that's how most counties operate that surround us in other states. Doing this by resolution, I mean, it works, but maybe the better way is to look at giving our counties the power of ordinance. And maybe someone could clean up that oil and gas thing on second reading.
Representative Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The as I indicated to the good representative from the middle of the state, we would welcome a second reading amendment if you all can get together and figure out what you'd like to say, if it's permitted, if it's ongoing, if it's new, however you all want to say that, we would welcome that second reading amendment. My good friend from Albany County, I'm not an attorney, so all I can do is read what attorneys say. And this one says, no general nuisance authority exists under the statutes. In some counties, zoning ordinances extend in some form the boundaries of the county. In many, including this county, they do not. Large sections of counties remain unzoned or minimally zoned. In the absence of zoning authority, the county lacks regulatory reach of any kind for hazards to health and safety, which would be addressed by the nuisance authority. Even in areas where zoning does reach, a gap exists. This is well as illustrated by the asbestos-contaminated site in this county north of this city. As you are well aware, the DEQ states that its authority cannot reach the hazard due to the non-friable nature, and they have since found some of it friable, nature of the asbestos. The county is preempted from acting due to the fact that hazardous waste is regulated by the DEQ and the fact that no violation of the zoning ordinances has occurred.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I freely admit, with all due respect, that the nuisance statutes, which are 66201 through 66209, do not address the particular nuisance that is being discussed here. And it does discuss what the good representative from Laramie County said. However, that is freely amendable, and I don't know why they don't have a bill that amends it. Now just stick with me here a little bit. There's no notice or opportunity to be heard when the county does something by resolution. You may know about it and you may not. But I'm telling you, if you read the county commissioner's minutes in your county, you're going to see resolutions passed all the time. And there was no advance notice and no opportunity to be heard. So here we go. They come out and they decide something is a nuisance. And they pass a resolution. It comes up in the county commissioner's meeting and they pass a resolution. And they say, we've determined, and that's what one thing that bothers me here, we've determined that that X, whatever it is a threat to health or safety. And we pass a resolution and say that's a nuisance. Now, whoever got to be heard about it that's interested in that question, I submit that nobody had an opportunity to hear about it. The next thing that the person that has X on their property is going to find out is that the county is out there with either a writ of mandamus or, what do they say here? They're going to be out there with a writ of mandamus or an injunction or an order of abatement, and the person says, I'd like to have a trial. I'd like to know what the standard is. I'd like to know how it was determined, whether there was any general public involvement in the determination of the nuisance. And then my particular situation, I'd like to have a trial, and I'd like to for somebody in the legal system to determine whether or not what I have fits that standard. And they're going to say, no, that's all over with. We had a resolution. We decided that it was a threat to health and safety. It's a done deal, and the writ of mandamus says, proceed, get it off of there. The writ of mandamus would be directed to the sheriff and says, take it off of there, or an order of abatement or whatever it may be. That just totally subverts due process and procedural due process, and I just object to that. I think that they ought to go back and use the 66201 through 66209, change the definitions. If it's friable asbestos, put that in there and make it a public nuisance. Make that the standard. Then you know what the standard is, and if you have some dispute about that, you get a trial. And you get some determination of the facts before the sheriff shows up on your property and starts throwing your stuff off. And believe me, I think these nuisances need to be abated. There's a lot of things out there that need to be done. But I'm afraid of this because I frankly don't think it can be defended. I think it's just going to get somebody in deep trouble with the Supreme Court somewhere, and then we're going to be back here doing it right. So on and against the bill.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I appreciate the discussion that's gone on. I sometimes find the discussion between the learned attorneys in this body some of the most entertaining. I can remember being a freshman, the good attorney from the Cody country, debating a former representative from Albany County, an attorney who's now at the other end of the hall, engaging in a vigorous and almost athletic debate. Certainly passionate. Finally, the good representative from Cody became a little bit frustrated because he said, "How many times do you get to see attorneys debate like this without being paid?" I wish I could hold a prop up here. Actually, I'm glad I can't bring a prop up here because we have a property that's along a state highway in Sheridan County. And it happens to be one of these properties that's located up on a hill, kind of like you'd see in some towns where the high school might put their letters. Except in this case, they have somewhere between half a dozen and 10 trailers up there. Sometimes the entire side's knocked out of the trailer, where you can see inside all the old broken down. Countless large white refrigerators and other things. It is a phenomenon. It is unbelievable. It is beyond any reasonable person's standards of a collection of treasure. And so I think with some justification, the neighbors are frustrated. It really does have what's called a neighborhood effect, and that effect is it is devaluing the property of the neighbors. And there is a role of government in that case to come in and protect individuals from that neighborhood effect. And so the other thing that I wanted to mention is I think I have appreciated more this session than ever before a willingness to work on the proposals and the bills that have come through here to create laws and to add to our books things that we can really be proud of as far as being well constructed and well thought out. And I appreciate all the efforts that's been done with that up until this point. And so I would just urge those with concern and with enough knowledge to understand the process and to understand the values of standards, because I think those are very valuable things that we have to have in our statutes because we don't want arbitrariness. Spend a little time. We have a weekend here, and see whether or not you can come up with some second reading amendments and make this truly a useful tool for our county commissioners and a valuable statute for all the citizens of Wyoming.
Chairman Illoway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Not to belabor the point, I didn't write it. An attorney wrote it. I didn't write it. The attorney wrote it in conjunction with the LSO attorneys. And they cited 18.2.101, which is the general powers, and it's Chapter 2, Corporate Powers and Duties of Counties. Under general powers, each organized county in the state is a body corporate, and the powers of the county shall be exercised by a board of county commissioners, which may sue, purchase, sell, make contracts, exercise other powers as provided by law, establish a surface water system, and then get into this, declare and abate nuisances. Now, this is where they put it. My understanding is that the zoning authority under a county has the authority to enforce ordinances, notices, lawsuits, orders allowing the county to clean up, lien if not paid. All I know is this is a nuisance. It needs to happen. It needs to occur. This has been going on. We've got now water flowing down through this draw, and we've got asbestos that is a health and safety Hazard.
Representative Gingrey.
I just had a question for the bringer, I guess for the good chairman of corporations. I was confused as to this asbestos question here in this county, which seems to have brought the bill. I didn't understand why DEQ couldn't go clean it up. It sounded as though they have the authority over it. I was just curious why they can't go do that. And number two, I just think the good gentleman from Albany County pointed out, because I didn't even realize it was in the books, the 66201, which is the Nuisance Act. I didn't realize it existed. It just seems to be the easier fix would be to redefine the definition of nuisance, which is actually in the statutes, and just expand it to include, so it would cover this. I guess those are just my two questions. I'm not opposed to it. I'm just trying to figure out sort of why DEQ didn't go do it themselves.
Chairman Childers. Chairman Eldaway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's out of DEQ's authority. They can go down there and say, yep, it's a mess, it's a nuisance. It does have asbestos, it is moving, but it's in that in-between, between zoning, DEQ. And what this is this is an area north of the city that's a trust land. The gentleman was allowed to dump some product there back in the 60s and 70s. He was a demolition person. Now there are there has been asbestos that's coming to the surface. It's moving. Now we've also got vermin that are coming out of the area. There are houses in close proximity to it. We can't get the people that own the land and that own the debris to clean it up. They really don't care. So somebody's got to do it, and it's a real health and safety hazard.
Chairman Childers.
Madam Chair, actually, to quote a former governor that spoke to this body at the end of the session, and to narrowly focus those comments on selected attorneys here, we respect your right to be wrong. Vote for the bill, and I call for the question.
Chairman Buchanan.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Just a question for the good chairman of Corporation Committee. Is vermin a non-game species?
Representative Brown.
Well, Madam Chairman, I think maybe my point was just made a little while ago in the debate when the statement was made the DEQ, you pick the agency, the DEQ, the county commissioner, whoever it can be, they go down there and they say, yep, that's a nuisance. And that is my whole point. There ought to be a better standard than them going to, you know the old saying, one man's junk is another man's treasure. And there ought to be a better standard than the county commissioners just going down there and saying, yep, that's a nuisance. In our opinion, it's a threat to health and safety. Therefore, it is the law. You will not have those anymore. It might be your corral. It might be your windmill. It might be your unsightly building. It might be any a number of things. And, of course, it comes up over junk vehicles all the time. But there ought to be a better way of establishing what a nuisance is and then measuring against that standard the particular threat that's being considered to determine whether it fits within the standard or not.
Chairman Samuelson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Well, I thought this would be a simple bill because it's so important that we do have this local control. And I guess what bothers us a lot is when we have other people looking at these problems and saying it's not really a problem. This thing, these people have been working with, I have never seen anybody work harder on a problem. They call their legislators. Obviously, we don't have any police power. All we can do is pass statutes. That's our method of trying to help. There were some, these neighbors have talked to the DEQ. The DEQ absolutely And we've been pounding on the DEQ to help here. They say we absolutely cannot help, we will not help. So we've lost them. They've had the EPA in. The EPA says, no, it's way out of our authority. You have to do something by yourself. Our county commissioners and all their attorneys have talked about it. The Judiciary Committee chairman is an extremely good attorney from here. We've talked to every attorney in this town, and I guess I really disagree with my good friend from Laramie that this is I do know how they do resolutions in Albany County because they're usually against me, and they're not very friendly. But this, I hope they're not listening to that. Okay, let's try to keep that a secret among us, okay? Madam Chairman, but this isn't a problem we can take lightly. We can't just throw up our hands. There is nothing else to do. And I want us to give us a local chance. It's a resolution. The people speaking against this bill don't live in our county. Their county commissioners don't have to pass a resolution. But I plead with you to pass this bill along, and we can amend it. The oil and gas thing, that amendment was brought to us by the lobbyists from the oil and gas, so that's exactly what we put in there. We did what they asked. We will gladly change it, but this is something we so desperately need. When you have friable asbestos, and we're talking semi-loads of this stuff, on your border, 50 yards from houses, from nice neighborhoods, it doesn't matter if they're nice neighborhoods, bad neighborhoods, nobody deserves to have that. But Madam Chairman, this is very, very important for us, and I hope you'll pass this bill. And, we do get a little excited, it's going to be a lot simpler once this Castle Doctrine becomes law, because then I can take care of my friends another way. But thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I couldn't hope to be as humorous as my friend from Laramie County, so I won't even try. Just one comment. I think the good representative from Albany is misinterpreting how this would work. I don't believe that the statute allows the county to go out and say, Joe Smith, you have a nuisance, abate it. I think that the purpose of the statute is to allow the county to create standards that can then be enforceable as a nuisance. And I think that addresses the constitutional concern that one of the other attorneys had. So, thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Samuelson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 27 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The bill passed, Senate File 27 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 19. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 19, introduced by Senator Fecht, an act relating to public health and safety regarding clandestine drug laboratories remediation. This bill was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Edmonds, Escobel F., Hammonds, Harvey, Lockhart, Meyer, Quarburg, Stewart. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Jones, Jorgensen, Peterson, Philp, Warren. Signed, Representative Philp, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File, never can find those things, 19 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and that's Amendment Number 1. I'll discuss the amendment, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. On page 7, lines 11 through 15, we delete completely because it caused confusion between that paragraph and another one, and it clarified the Senate file. Under page 7, line 17, we did some numerical corrections and deleted appeal, and then had a hearing as provided in a certain statute. Page 7, continuing, line 18, it delete entirely. That just cleans it up as it goes. On line 8, or page 8, line 13, the site of the premise, we delete that and then have a better description that it's a portion of the land and delete the balance of the line after secure thee. All of these, line, page 8, line 14, delete premise and insert a portion of the building structure of the land that is uninhabitable. And then on page 13, line 9, delete shall and put in may. All of this was clarifying and well thought out. I'd urge your support of the standing committee. I stand for questions on it or call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We do have a substitute bill that makes it much easier to follow, and I would turn the discussion of the substitute bill over to the good chairman from Laramie County, who happens to be my roommate. He's tall, he's articulate, and he's going to get you through the main event of the day on clandestine drug laboratories remediation.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you didn't say, and he's not an attorney, but he tries to argue like one. Come on, my fellow attorney from Albany County, get ready. This is one right down your pocket. This particular bill came to us a year ago in regards to clandestine drug laboratories, and we did not pass it because it wasn't ready for prime time. This one has been vetted through numerous areas, been looked at by numerous attorneys, been looked at by the big guys downstairs. So let me tell you a little bit about this. This refers to an area here in North Cheyenne, but it also refers to an area in the Star Valley, and it also could occur in other areas. Now, we can tell you that meth laboratories, the number of meth laboratories in the last couple years has declined, and that was due to some laws that were passed 3 years ago. But the remnants still exist, and there's always the possibility of a super lab, like an 18-wheeler, parked on a rancher's isolated land. So it's important that we take a look at what do you do when an owner refuses to clean up the lab. We've changed the bill a little bit from last year, where we say the owner must now pay 1% of the approximate value of the property, which is similar to a 1% insurance policy deductible. We seek funds from the Crime Victims Compensation Fund, although probably no funds there. We talk about seized assets directly related to the lab in question, and we talk about a state of Wyoming fund that's been established. There are 6 pages of added due process protections this year in here. And that's really the most significant change between the bankers, realtors, and hotel owners, 6 pages of due process. The reason we're talking about this particular piece of property, and it may happen wherever, but we have tried endlessly to clean up this property. It is a house. The original owner needed to go into a rest home. He had assets, and therefore he couldn't go. So he gave the property to a relative, relieving him of any assets, and the relative lived out of state. The relative doesn't care about the property. We have gone, I think the Senate sponsor said he had gone through 23 different people trying to figure out how to remediate this property. One of the real problems with this is, and we went to the building inspector and said, well, now, this is certainly a problem. And he said, well, the concrete foundation's not hurt, so it won't come under the building codes. We've looked at the eminent domain laws, and then we've looked at city, county, how to work under this eminent domain laws. We've looked at city, county health. There's no language because, unfortunately, the damage is not on the outside of the house. It's on the inside. So health and safety, but it's on the inside. It has become a blight on a neighborhood. There is absolutely nothing that can be done. This house has sat there, I believe it is now 4 years, rotting. But there is nothing in the city of Cheyenne ordinances or anything that can be done short of this statute that talks about clandestine laboratories. Now, we understood that the large city in the center of the state has an ordinance, but they don't have the protection. And in some cases, the property owner may allow the cleanup to go ahead. In some cases, the property owner cleans it up, and maybe the insurance company will take care of it. This happens to be a property where the owner doesn't care and refuses to do anything. So let's walk through the bill quickly. The time is approaching when we're going to kill a couple other bills. On page 2, we talk about the definitions. This is a new definition. Clandestine laboratory operation remediation means the remediation of a clandestine laboratory operation carried out by a law enforcement agency acting as an emergency responder. We can walk through on the bottom of page 3, talk about the owner of real estate has paid all claims for reimbursement pursuant to Wyoming statutes 35.9-158. We get into 140, and this is the 140 is Crime Victims Compensation Act and distribution of monies. And I should have said that 35.9-158 is in the back of the – it's a new statute, a new paragraph on page 13, I think. But anyhow, distribution of monies to crime victim services and victim assistance providers, that's under the Crime Victims Compensation Act, Victim Services Division of the Attorney General. On page 4, we talk about victim services. There may or may not be money available there. We talk about the prompt return of property. On the top of page 5, victims and witnesses have the right to have any personal property which is not contraband promptly returned and any real estate subject to declaration as uninhabitable under statutes released to the control of the real estate owner. We talk about incident. We've added incident. Also includes the discovery of hazardous materials related to clandestine laboratory operations. Bottom of page 5, we talk about State Emergency Response Commission, which they will, by rule and regulation, establish standards. This is the top of page 6, for the protection of the safety of law enforcement personnel. Talks about decontamination and sampling standards, appropriate methods for testing, when site may be declared remediated. The commission shall, by rule and regulation, establish due process standards for the protection of property interests of real estate owners. We talk about provision of written notice by certified mail to the real estate owner. We talk about the local response authority on the bottom of page 7. On page 8, we talk about until the incident commander has declared the threat to public safety has ended, the incident commander shall have the authority to issue an order that the site or premise is uninhabitable. And this goes on for several pages. We talk about the order issued under subsection D of this section shall be in writing, shall state the grounds for the order, and so forth. This is court, Wyoming Rules of Civil Procedure, and so forth. We get over to page 11. Right to claim reimbursement. The state is given the right to claim reimbursement for costs under paragraph A under 35.9-157, but under B, notwithstanding subsection A of this section and except with respect to response to a clandestine laboratory operation, no person shall be liable under this act if the incident was caused by, and it goes on. Here we talk about expense recovery and civil remedies. Page 11. On page 12, the law enforcement agency acting as an emergency responder shall keep an accurate account of the expenses incurred in carrying out the remediation. On the bottom of page 12, we talk about the court shall examine, correct if necessary, and allow the expense account to the extent the expenses exceed those recovered from the party responsible for the laboratory. If the owner did not know or could not know with reasonable diligence, have known of the laboratory operation, the amount recoverable from the owner shall be limited to 1% of the fair market value as determined by the county assessor. Now, that takes in some more due process, but if the owner won't clean it up, somehow somebody else has to clean it up, and there's no remedy to do that. On page 13, we talk about the debt, the lien. Page 14, expenses of the law enforcement agency allowed by the court. On page 14, exemptions to reimbursements, except with respect to a response to a clandestine laboratory operation incident. And I thought there were some things that had to do with the list on page 15, but it really, the list is part of B, 359-159B, and really has no reason to be there except it's part of the statute. And it goes on to page 16. Notwithstanding any other provisions of this act, if a local law enforcement agency acting as emergency responder does not find an immediate and substantial threat to public health and so forth. We talk about the owner of the property shall have 90 days to remediate the property. On 17, the owner is making good faith effort to remediate the property. The owner has a practical time schedule to complete the remediation. We give those property owners that want to do something the ability to clean it up. Again, this property owner doesn't care. House is in the middle of a residential neighborhood. It's surrounded by upscale houses. Owner doesn't care. This went to both JACs, and there was appropriated from the general fund $150,000 for a clandestine laboratory remediation account. This appropriation shall be for the period beginning with the effective date of this act and ending June 30th, 2010. I'll stand for questions.
Representative Gilmore.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm on and for Senate File 19. I'm really excited about this because I was unable to support this last year. It was just too punitive to the property owners. And the things that bothered me have been cleared up, such as it addresses the costs of cleanup to unsuspecting property owners, which sometimes is the case. That last year's bill read so much differently. It really could have been cost prohibitive. Another thing it says that's really great is it will prospective buyers will be able to get a full disclosure of what the cleanup was, but that this title on this house or deed on this house won't carry the stigma of being a meth house into infinity. So thank you.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Madam Chair, just sort of going along with that, I think I understand most of the bill, but even as with last year, I guess continue to have concerns that, you know, an unsuspecting landowner, unsuspecting any type of owner, that they do diligence somewhat on who they allow to rent a piece of property or allow in a home, and that does happen to them. They're basically liable for this, from what I understand. And I understand the health and safety issues, and definitely something needs to be taken care of, but basically, it almost an unsuspecting landowner or homeowner could be bankrupt from the cleanup from this, and that's just one might say that the state in trying to take care of some of these labs going around, and I don't know the answer to that, but that's my one concern. I guess I'd just like to have it discussed. I'm not saying I don't support the bill, because from a health and safety standpoint, something needs to be done. But on the other hand, I guess I'd just like to hear a little bit more discussion on that.
Representative Brown.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I must say I am truly impressed with the amount of due process in this bill. And I, And I think you'll see that. And if you look at the changes from last year to this year, most of the changes involve inculcating this whole process with due process. And I don't think there are going to be any unsuspecting landowners caught under this bill, unlike the last one. So on and in favor of the bill.
Representative Meyer.
Madam Chairwoman, thank you. In response to the good representative from Cody, I would call attention to page 12, where it, Romanette 2, at the bottom of the page, where it says, if the owner did not know or could not with reasonable diligence have known of the clandestine laboratory operation, the amount recoverable from the owner shall be limited to 1% of the fair market value, which keeps the cost way, way down. The 1% was chosen because that would be what a deductible on an insurance policy would be. So this does address, I hope, what the good chairman asked.
Chairman Buchanan.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I had a couple questions in here. On page 9, the bill provides for the property to be, if it's been ordered uninhabitable, it can still be transferred or sold prior to remediation. And it says that can be done if full written disclosure is made to a prospective purchaser. I guess my questions would be, since the government would have already stepped in at this point and the incident commander says it's uninhabitable, is the government protected under the Wyoming Governmental Claims Act for any liability if the property is not remediated by the purchaser, or is the purchaser somewhere going to be required to actually complete the remediation? And so that's the first question. And the next one is under subsection E, and I guess that's on the bottom of page 9, under 359156E, the order that's issued under subsection D, deeming the property to be uninhabitable, was there any discussion about recording that order with the county clerk so that any subsequent purchaser would be on notice that there is a remediation issue with the property?
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure of that, but I will tell you that there is a problem right now in Casper where a lady did buy a house, put money down, all kinds of things, found out it was meth house, and now she is suing everybody to try and get her money back because it was not, she did not have due notice that it was used for that. I did fail to talk about motels or hotels where a portion may be have been used for meth. The incident commander would not necessarily make all of it uninhabitable. It would be only that part that would be where the meth was or what he determined, so it could be a room or a wing. And it's just exactly like if this was in not the whole house but in the garage or something. So it would be, I think we've tried to take care of everything. It's a better bill than last year, and I appreciate the good representative from across the hill saying nice things.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a few questions. One is, it appears the incident commander is making most of the decisions, and I found the definition of incident commander to be person in charge of all responders at the site of an emergency response. I was just wondering if the committee had considered anyone other than the incident commander, perhaps the sheriff or if it's in a city, the chief of police. Because what I'm concerned about, the incident commander many times could just be the EMT in charge that got there for, you know, someone was having a heart attack and entered the room, and he's the incident commander. And all of a sudden, he's in charge of making all these decisions, and he continues to make decisions for weeks and months, it appears. And I'm not sure if all these EMTs or, you know, the deputy fire chief all of a sudden wanted all these responsibilities. So just one idea was maybe someone different, like the elected official, like the sheriff, would make the final decision, or even someone trained. I'm not sure if the EMT is going to be trained to to know to declare something uninhabitable. But more importantly, that's actually not the part that concerns me with that person making that decision. Later on, they're making all kinds of decisions months later as to whether or not they're going to let them back in. And then my second question was, it appears that you're not allowed to get into court for at least, well, you got to file your answer. So that takes a little while. Well, answer is within 20 days. Then once you file your answer, the court can wait another 20 days. So the earliest it looks like you could actually get to court to argue that they're wrong, that you should have your house back, is 40 days. Well, I guess it could be a little shorter if you got your answer in quicker. But that seems like a while to wait to get to court. And then lastly, all the decisions, it keeps coming back to the law enforcement agency shall serve this, shall serve that. I'm just wondering if that should be more the state, meaning in many situations when we say state, we mean the county or the city, but that the decisions being made by the governmental body and not simply by the law enforcement agency as to all these court proceedings. Those were just questions. I was wondering if that had been discussed in committee.
Chair, Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I can answer the incident commander question. That's a term of art, actually. The first person who arrives on scene is the incident commander, and then they can pass off command, so it's a fluid kind of thing. It's not so much a person who is the person who lasts through the whole thing, but it's the person who is the most qualified to handle the situation, and there's a whole series of federal FEMA ICS classes that define all that. And I think if you look in our emergency management statutes, you may even find it there. So that's what the definition of the incident commander is and how that works.
Chairman Illoway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we go back to page 5, under definitions, 35.9.153 talks about the State Emergency Response Commission, the creation and duties. And there's a lot of statutes. I used to be a member of the State Emergency Response Commission. There's a lot of information on page 6 and 7 talking about the CERC. It talks about on the bottom of page 7, local response authority, and clandestine laboratory operation has been put into this particular paragraph, and then it talks about the incident commander shall declare an incident ended and so forth. It talks about what the incident commander can do. It talks about on page 11 about the local emergency response authorities. And the good representative from Land of Snow talks about 40 days is a long time to get into court. It's been 4 years that nothing's been done with this house. So I urge the adoption of this Senate file.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 19 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 19 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 42. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 42, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to courts regarding Wyoming Court Security Act. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Alden, Begbie, Buchanan, Dockstetter, Gingrich, Mercer, Olson, Shepperson, Throne. Signed, Representative Buchanan, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Jones, Jorgensen, Peterson, Philp, Warren. Signed, Representative Philp, Chairman.
You have heard the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Buchanan?
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 42 do pass, and would further move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 42. The Standing Committee Amendment, ladies and gentlemen, Basically, if you want to look on page 3, line 7, one of the committee members thought that the two legislators that would form this commission should be appointed by the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate rather than the co-chairman of the Joint Judiciary Interim Committee. So I voted for that and ceded my power there. Page 3, line 18, just some grammatical things. Since we were going to have more than one legislative member, it says members, and then there on line 20 instead of his, it says there. So I'd stand for any questions on the standing committee amendment, but if there are none, I would call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I'll go ahead and explain the bill, and then I believe there's a committee of the whole amendment number 1 as well. Ladies and gentlemen, this bill creates a commission known as the Wyoming Court Security Commission. This is an issue that we've been attempting to study for the last several years. You might remember we had created a few task forces in the past few years that didn't make it on the other end of the Capitol. There was an anti-task force movement. However, there was still the issue of courtroom security across the state. And so what this bill does, as I said, creates a court security commission. You can see that it would be supervised by the Wyoming Supreme Court. There would be 9 members, along with the director of the Office of Homeland Security or his designee. And if you look at page 2 and on to page 3, you see who the members of the commission would be. And the most important part of the bill starts on page 4 at the top, subsection E. I'm not going to read all those things to you, but the commission is tasked with several items, and just suffice it to say they need to identify what we want in security for our citizens and our judges and the attorneys in the court system. And it goes all the way from equipment to local security management committees, and facility studies to see which courthouses need what. Some of the newer courthouses certainly don't need as much as some of the older courthouses. They're tasked to recommend to the legislature distribution of funds to the counties that may be needed for the provision of court security, and then it's required that they report no later than September 1st, 2009, and annually thereafter to the governor, the chief justice of the Supreme Court, the Joint Judiciary Interim Committee, and to the Joint Appropriations Interim Committee as to the status of court security in the state of Wyoming. As you can see, it's not a large appropriation. It's $20,000 to the Supreme Court to pay for these expenses, as well as $4,600 on page 6 for the Legislative Service Office to pay expenses for the salary and per diems for the commission members. And then there is the committee of the whole amendment that I believe the good representative from Jackson will move.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move committee of the whole amendment number 1. What this does, if you look on page 4 of the bill, it's Romanet 3. And Romanet 3 reads, adopt reasonable rules and regulations as provided by the Wyoming Administrative Procedure Act. My concerns with the commission adopting rules and regulations, they're already adopting standards. They're going to adopt the basic training requirements, the requirements for the equipment, the basic protocol and procedures they're going to promulgate. They're going to establish some local court committees, and they're going to visit your community and see and give recommendations to your community as to how best to do your courtroom security. My concern is twofold. One is sort of technical. We have 2 legislators on the committee. I had some concerns of whether or not we can actually be giving legislators, these 2 particular legislators, more power than other legislators in that they are going to be promulgating rules and regulations. I had some concerns about legislators taking on that of the role of another branch of government. The other concern with them promulgating rules and regulations was that these buildings are all county-owned. These are all county buildings, the county courthouse. Now, occasionally you'll hear the judge say it's the judge controls the building, but the commissioners usually win the argument because they say, well, judge, have fun cleaning the bathrooms this month. So the county usually wins on that argument that the building, they own it, they control the building. So the question becomes whether or not these rules that would be promulgated by this commission would have any applicability to county government if the county had to follow the rules and regulations. It seemed just to not be needed for them to do rules because the committee is already going to come up with the basic protocols and procedures, and I don't see anybody not adopting them when they show up and hand you the basic protocol of, you know, when someone comes in, check, you know, ask them to walk through the metal detector. I don't think we actually needed rules to state that. So I would ask that we delete out the part that they can adopt rules and regulations.
Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. Is there any other discussion on the bill?
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I had a question as to whether or not, and what I see in page 4 are the standards that would be established. I don't see anything in here that tells me that they'll be looking at what level, if any, of court security would be required in any particular county. I mean, I hearken to the Transportation Security Administration and what we see in airports around the country. That took place because of a major disaster and perceived threat. And it established, I guess, standards that then everybody has to meet. And the question of whether or not those standards are appropriate at a particular locations, I think, should be a part of what this commission looks at. And I wonder if there was any discussion about that.
Representative Gingrey. Chairman Buchanan.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. You know, I think that's a valid point, and there has been discussion on that. If you look at page 4 under subsection E, you know, the Romanet 1 there is to establish, I think, general standards statewide, what we want to see as far as courtroom security. But if you look at the sections below that, especially D and subsection E, Romanet 2, you see that there's an establishment of local court security management committees, and you also see that the bill would have visitations and inspections of court security programs. And the idea with those is to have court security that is unique to the particular judicial district, not a one-size, fits-all court security processes, because like I said, some courts already have security in place. I know Niobrara County, we've got metal detectors at both entrances, and in Goshen County, we only set up metal detectors if we've got a big trial that's kind of controversial. Otherwise, there's nothing to prevent somebody from coming in with a gun and killing us all. So we intend to look at each district and evaluate it on its own needs and go from there.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the good majority floor leader raises a good point. For example, I will state that about a year ago, a federal judge, her family was killed. And so the federal court system suddenly put out a rule, and they forgot that there's different levels of federal courthouses, and they issued a rule that stated that all federal courthouses have to have court security officers during all from 8 to 5 every day. Well, what they forgot, there are certain federal courthouses, such as the one in my community, which is used maybe twice a month. The federal judge will come to our community. And occasionally, we have a federal magistrate, but he doesn't meet every day. And again, he probably meets maybe once a week. But there are four court security officers that guard the building every single day because of this new rule, even though there's nobody inside the building. There's no court going on. They're just standing there guarding the building. So clearly it can go astray. And so hopefully this commission will understand that point, that we need to have different levels of security for the different levels of use of our courthouses.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Buchanan's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 42 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, those opposed, no. Senate File 42 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 5. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 5, introduced by Senator Fecht, an act relating to criminal offenses regarding peace officers, probation, and parole agents. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Alden, Begbie, Buchanan, Dockstetter, Gingrey, Mercer, Olson, Shepperson, Throne. Signed, Representative Buchanan, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Buchanan?
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 5 do pass, and would further move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 5. The Standing Committee amendment basically took out, the Senate had amended this somewhere along the way to include detention officers in this bill. And the bill itself seeks to provide protection to probation and parole officers, as you can see there, basically so we can fit them underneath the definition of peace officers, so that if they are ever interfered with, as you see under 65204, interference with a peace officer, they would be covered. So if a criminal or a probationer is under supervision and interferes with his probation or parole officer, then he can still be he or she could still be charged with interference. Currently, now probation and parole agents do not fall under the definition of peace officer in the title of interference with a peace officer, and so that's what this bill does. It brings in probation and parole into that definition. So, back to the Standing Committee amendment, the Senate decided that I don't know where they put it on. I didn't look, but they amended it to include detention officers. We took it back out in this Standing Committee amendment because detention officer is already included under the definition in peace officer in Wyoming Statute 61104A, Romanet 6J, and so we didn't deem it necessary to include detention officer in there.
Question.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Buchanan's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 5 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 5 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
All those in favor of Mr. Majority Floor Leader's motion that the Committee of the Whole rise and report, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The motion is adopted.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 28, amended, recommended, do pass. Senate File 56, Representative Lubno announced a conflict of interest on Senate File 56, recommended, do pass. Senate File 53, recommended, do pass. Senate File 71, amended, recommended, do pass. Senate File 38, amended and further amended, recommended, do pass. Senate File 27, amended, recommended, do pass. Senate File 19, amended, recommended, do pass. Senate File 42, amended and further amended, recommended, do pass. Senate File 05, amended, recommended, do pass. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Harvey.
I move adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All of those. Representative Childers. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to it say no.
No.
Congratulations, Representative Harvey. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 62, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Jorgensen, Peterson, Warren, no, Jones, Philp. Signed, Representative Philp, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 29, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Goggles, Yagi, McComey, Teeters, Wallace, White. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 54, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Kraft, Dirks, Goggles, Yagi, McComey, Teeters, White. No, Davison, Wallace. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 70, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Goggles, Yagi, McComey, Teeters, Wallace, White. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 12, respectfully reports back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Escobel F., Hammonds, Harvey, Meyer, Quarburg, Stewart. No, Brechtel, Edmonds, Lockhart. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Representative Childers.
Mr. Speaker, your Joint Conference Committee on Senate File 69, Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Amendments, will be meeting upon adjournment of both bodies in room H10, which is the House TRW committee meeting room.
Representative McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to re-refer Senate File 29, Engrossed Public Library Endowment Challenge Program, and Senate File 70, Engrossed School Finance Amendments, to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, Senate File 29, Engrossed, will be re-referred from Committee Number 4 to Committee Number 2. And without objection, Senate File 70, Engrossed, will be re-referred from Committee Number 4 to Committee Number 2. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your conference committee for SJ or Senate File 9 will meet with the like committee Monday, March 3rd at 9:30 in S18.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet Monday, room H18 at noon recess to discuss interim topics.
We are now at that order of business of requests to concur with Senate amendments to House bills. The first message.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Childers.
Your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet Monday, March 3rd at 8 a.m. in room H10, jointly with the Senate to finalize interim study topics.
Chairman Philp.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, will meet on adjournment today to discuss Senate File 26, Business Entities, Registered Agents, and Senate File 29, Library Endowment. And if time permits, and if we referred Senate File 70, School Finance Amendments. Okay.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Since we're announcing meetings, your committee number 10, Labor, will meet upon adjournment today to complete work on Senate File 24, Health Insurance Clinical Trials. And we will meet again on Monday upon adjournment to consider interim topics.
Members of the House, we are at that order of business of requests to concur with Senate amendments to House bills. The first message for our consideration is in message 203 on House Bill 6. Representative Childers.
Mr. Speaker, for message 203, concurrence is requested for House Bill 206, State Veterans Museum. And I will explain what the amendment basically has done. What the Senate has done is basically, if you go to the bill, House Bill 6, the Section 1 was removed, which basically gave the description of the location of the museum. They amended that out and then renumbered as necessary, and then inserted on page 4, line 9, excuse me, going back to page 3, at the bottom of the page, after the word department, took out the language except that the military department shall enter into a new lease agreement with the county commissioners for the lease of the building where the museum is located, and then added the language that basically there is an appropriated to the military department from the general fund $100,000 to be expended for professional consultative services to determine the need for a veterans museum and provide data upon various and sundry things for the museum and interpretive needs, interpretation needs, et cetera, and so forth, and basically determine where and what and so forth for a veterans, Wyoming's Veterans Museum. And this, of course, now has an appropriation, which is approved by the Senate. And while it was a little unusual language, they left the museum in the statutes for the state parks and still allowed the military department to administer the museum, and then added language to do a study. I'm going to urge your aye vote because for the simple reason we have tried, this is the third year we've tried this. I think it's important for the county, the state parks, as, again, if I've discussed previously about the entire issue of having our state museums accredited and not have the possibility of them losing that accreditation, I think it's important that we proceed with this bill and also resolve the issue of where a veterans museum should be and the details on that. So I'm going to encourage your aye vote, and I guess I'll be open for questions.
Representative Philp.
Well, I'd ask you to vote no on this. This was never discussed in all the time we've talked about this in appropriations. I just don't think that's the right way to do this. I know what'll happen with this. They'll do a study, and it'll come back, and the study will say that we need to build a new museum somewhere. That wasn't the whole intent of this bill when it all started, I don't think. And this has been a football that's been kicked around quite a bit, but now it's being kicked one more time. And I would ask you to vote no on this.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question. Because of the location of the existing museum, it would seem to me if you're really doing an evaluation, I think one of the really problematic things is with Homeland Security and the proximity of this to a flight facility and warehouses. And if you're really going to develop it into a significant museum that you would hope people would come and see, that would be part of the evaluation. And had consideration been given to that if you proceed in the manner that this indicates?
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It was my understanding that the Senate Appropriations Committee stripped out the $100,000, so this must have been put back in on the Senate floor. At least that was the information I had, that they could do the study, but without the $100,000.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think I was the one that was responsible for this language that they're saying be deleted. My thought had been that if we're truly going to transfer this to the military department, and if we're truly going to free up state parks and cultural resources from any responsibility, then the military department ought to enter into a new lease with Natrona County, rather than doing some kind of an assumption of an existing lease with state parks and historical and cultural resources, which leaves some residual responsibility there. And so I'm looking at my good chairman, and I'm saying I just wonder about that, and I just wonder if maybe we shouldn't vote against this, and at least go down and talk to him about it before we do this.
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would also urge the body to vote against this concurrence. This is just totally different from what this body passed, went to committee, we went to three readings, and then I too agree with the good chairman of appropriations. I just think that this is not the place to bring us a concurrence with an appropriation already in it and ask us to concur. So I urge the body to vote against this.
Representative Phil.
Well, and Mr. Speaker, another thing, what I understand in the museum that they have there in Natrona County is part of an old building that was built during World War II, and there's murals in there that are attached to that building. And if you go to a new museum, which this study calls for, is for a new museum, what happens to that building and those murals and things that are attached to that building that is there in Natrona County?
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I didn't get the answer back on the $100,000 being stripped out by appropriations, and so I still have that question out there. But I would urge a no vote at this time on this one to see the rationale for this a little more clearly. There may be merit in it if the net result of that is to ultimately have the military department end up with the museum, including the responsibility. Some of these hooks that seem to be wrapped back in here are difficult to understand without maybe a conference committee discussion.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Speaker, just to clear up a few things brought up. Number one, the building is a World War II building. The murals are World War II. They're very unique murals in the building. The building probably cannot be moved. The murals would be destroyed if they're moved. But there's an additional problem in that
Various veterans from any number of wars have donated a lot of their memorabilia to the museums, and the museum would never be able to be brought up to date with a reasonable amount of money to properly hold those additional artifacts. There is a discussion about, there's something could be done, a building built over this one to basically house the whole issue for the murals. But the purpose of the study was to take care of all this and basically handle the whole issue with the Veterans Museum as well as this building and the location of a new museum may not show up there. I would say that there's probably two issues on this amendment. One, the issue that the good representative from Laramie brought up about the lease agreement, new lease agreement, and then also with the state parks retaining in their statutes the museum itself, even though the military department would administer it. This particular amendment concerning the appropriation, I guess I would remind the body that there was an attempt on both ends of adding an amendment just for that study. We rejected it, and I believe that the Senate rejected it also. And that's basically the language from that amendment that was put in this bill and accepted by the Senate floor. And, we could probably handle a conference committee to discuss it with them. I would ask that the body consider this. We need to make the transfer because there's some way or another there is a concern about this entire issue remaining with the state parks. But the bill is complicated as it is. I will not deny that, and I thought that the easiest thing would be to vote aye and concur. But I guess we'd be more than happy to go back and talk about it if the body decides that. So with that, I call for the question.
We're now voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 6. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Anderson. Bagby. Berger. Blake. Brechtel. Brown. Buchanan. Childers. Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Dockstetter, Edmonds, Edwards, Esquivel F, Esquivel K, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Eichel, Illaway, Yagi, Jones, Jorgensen, Landon, Lockhart, no. Lubno, no. Madden, no. Martin, no. McComey, no. Mercer, no. Meyer, no. Miller, no. Millen, no. Olson, no. Peterson, no. Philp, no. Korberg, no. Samuelson, no. Simlick, no. Shepperson, no. Simpson, no. Slater, no. Stewart, no. Stubson, no. Teeters, no. Thompson, no. Throne, Wallace, no. Warren, no. White, no. Swanitzer Dan, no. Swanitzer Dave, no. Mr. Speaker. No. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 2 ayes, 58 noes.
By your vote, you have voted not to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 6. Representative Millen.
Mr. Speaker, may I have privilege of the floor, please?
You certainly may.
I just wanted to introduce some people that are special in my life. They came down today. My husband, John, and two of my children, Matthew and Patrick, are up in the North Gallery.
The next message for our consideration is found in message number 204 on House Bill number 8. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on message 204 to House Bill 8, Election Code Revisions. Looks like quite a change, but it really somebody decided that they wanted to put a whole lot of other items that they felt were not in the title. So page 1, line 10, they put what they felt was missing in the title into the title of the bill. The main thing that they did, page 10, line 12, they added a section, and let me read it. We had new language that said something to the effect, the ballot box shall not again be opened until the polls are closed, new language, except when necessitated by operation of the voting equipment at the direction of the county clerk, and only in the presence of two or more election judges, and the body down the hall said, from different major parties if possible. I move concurrence and ask for the vote.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess this would be my question. Having been an election judge, I thought it was in statutes. Every single thing we did, they always had someone from each party. And I think this actually weakens it because they say from different major parties, if possible. So that's kind of saying you don't have to have someone from each party. And so I really think if they want to add from different major parties, fine. But I think it really weakens the way that we do it by adding the clause, if possible. And for that reason, I think that the current way that we do it is stronger. And I'm going to vote no.
Further discussion. We're now voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 8. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Anderson. Bagby. Berger. Blake. Brechtel. Brown. Buchanan. Childers. Kraft. Davison. Dirks, no. Dockstetter, no. Edmonds, no. Edwards, aye. Esquivel F, no. Esquivel K, no. Gilmore, no. Gingery, aye. Goggles, no. Hales, no. Hallinan, no. Hammonds, no. Harshman, aye. Harvey, no. Harvey, no. Eichel, no. Illaway, aye. Yagi, aye. Jones, aye. Jorgensen, no. Landon, Lockhart, aye. Lubnow, aye. Madden, aye. Martin, no. McComey, no. Mercer, no. Meyer, no. Miller, aye. Millen, no. Olson, aye. Peterson, aye. Philp, aye. Korberg, no. Samuelson, no. Simlek, aye. Shepperson, no. Simpson, aye. Slater, aye. Steward, no. Stubson, aye. Teeters, Thompson, no. Throne, aye. Wallace, no. Warren, no. White, no. Swanitz or Dan, no. Swanitz or Dave, no. Mr. Speaker, aye. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Gingery, aye to no. Edmonds, no to aye. Are there any other changes? Samuelson, no to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed, 28 ayes, 32 noes.
By your vote, you have voted to not concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 8. The next message for our consideration is found in message 208 on House Bill 90. Chairman Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on House Bill 90, message 208, and asked you to vote aye. Ladies and gentlemen, the Senate just inserted some clarifying language. As you can see on page 11, line 6, they inserted expenses may include the cost to secure expert consultation. And what that is in reference to is in section 3, we gave an appropriation of $250,000 to the DEQ for use by the working group that we created in this legislation. And some of the testimony in the committees was that they would need to hire some folks to help them out. And if you remember in the bill, and if you wanted to look back at that, in subsection G, we created or we directed that the state oil and gas supervisor, the state geologist, and the director were to convene a working group to develop appropriate bonding procedures, post-closure inspection and maintenance procedures, et cetera. And so that's what this goes to, and I think it just makes it more clear that they can use these costs to secure expert consultation. Thank you.
Representative Lobnow.
I urge you to vote for this concurrence. This helps the bill a little bit.
We are now voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 90. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Alden, Anderson, Bagby, Berger, Blake, Brechtel, Brown, Buchanan, Childers, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Dockstetter, Edmonds, Edwards, Esquivel F., Esquivel K., Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Eichel, Illaway, Yagi, Jones, Jorgensen, Landon, Lockhart, Lubno, Madden, Martin, McComey, Mercer, Meyer, Miller, Millen, Olson, Peterson, Philp, Horberg, Samuelson, Simlick, Shepperson, Simpson, Slater, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Warren, White, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 60 ayes.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 90. The naming of the conference committee for House Bill 6 will be Representative Childers, Chair, Representative Gilmore, Representative Lockhart. The naming of the conference committee for House Bill 8, Representative Illaway, Chair, Representative Throne, Representative Hammonds. We are now at that order of business of consideration of Joint Conference Committee reports. The first report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee number 1 on House Bill 1. Chairman Philp.
Mr. Speaker, I move Joint Conference Committee report on Senate File 1 and ask that you vote aye. And well, not until I read it to you. And, Mr. Speaker, you have on your desk a document that looks like this. It says Joint Conference Committee Report, Senate File 1, here, 20-some pages. And then you have the cheat sheet that shows the results of that conference committee. And also, you would have a spreadsheet that shows the results of the local government funding as a result of that conference committee. And, Mr. Speaker, on a lot of these items, we just kind of split the difference with the Senate. If you look on your cheat sheet, you see the identical amendments. Well, it turned out that one of those amendments, and about halfway down through those identical amendments, you see one there that on the left-hand side says DFA. That means delete and further amend, and that was because we had a footnote in there that got overlooked when that was when it was added onto the list. So in the bold language there is where we adopted language. On the right there you can see that bold language, and that allows expenditure of up to $1 million of the $33.4 million SLIB funding for energy audits in local governments. And that was an amendment that was put on here in the House, and there's a language in the bill that in the conference committee report that allows that for these energy audits, and the reasoning was to allow for energy savings. Going on down, Mr. Speaker, and we'll go on down to where you see the Section 2 regular funding in the block down here. And when you see the deleted is where it's crossed out, and we deleted a House amendment there that added the $200,000 for the study of the state's EMS services. And if you have questions, just interrupt me at any point, Mr. Speaker. The next one, we adopted S-2002, and that was Chinese language. That was an amendment that was run here in the House. We adopted that language, and it requires the Department of Education to expend $100,000 general fund for Chinese language education, but it didn't add any new dollars. We adopted House 2057 on cultural resources, and that removed a match requirement for historical context development. We then deleted a Senate amendment that was an appropriation of $7,500 general fund for administration of legislative artwork. We deleted House 2056A, and that was a footnote requiring scientific support on projects for Wildlife Trust Fund projects. We adopted Senate 3006A, sage grouse planning and protection, and that allows sage grouse raising on private bird farms under Game and Fish Commission rules, quite similar to what we allow with pheasants. We deleted and further amended on the House 2020A, and you see there in the bold, we deleted and further amended to include a footnote stating that only $100 million general fund shall be included in the 2011-2012 standard budget, and this refers to Department of Transportation funding. And then we also adopted a footnote that requires DOT district engineers to confer with county commissioners for funds expended in 2010. And then we deleted several amendments there. They all relate to the subjects that we talked about above, but what we did there was just deleted and further amended. Going on down, Mr. Chairman, we deleted S-2051A, requiring expenditure of $126,000 general fund to contract with Aging and Disability Resource Center to train senior center personnel advising people on nursing home alternatives. We adopted $60,000 general fund for the foster grandparents program. And that was within the Division of Aging as well. We adopted House 3019A that required $48,000 general fund
for the Father Factor program. We adopted S-2046, and that requires Office of State Lands and Investments to expend $100,000 for bark beetle efforts. The next one down there, we deleted the House amendment, and this is regarding an irrigation system at the governor's residence. And we adopted the Senate amendment there, and it also had a footnote attached to it that described how that was to be spent. Going on to the next page, second page on your cheat sheet. We reduced the Senate appropriation of $500,000 for the Hobbs School to $250,000. And the Senate had three amendments regarding that, and we deleted all of them and just further amended that to clarify it. We deleted the two House amendments, 2026A and 3011A, following testimony in the committee that the Department of Corrections would fund the $3.2 million for a secure residential treatment center. We added a footnote allowing the Department of Corrections to spend up to $434,000 for GPS tracking, but did not increase funding. It's only an authorization, and I believe that's permissive for the department. On community facilities, we deleted that footnote allowing the tribes to participate in the community facilities program, and that footnote did have a problem with the wording, and the Senate hadn't adopted that footnote, so we weren't able to do anything about that. We deleted and further amended on the Wyoming Business Council. We included $115,300 general fund and a footnote for half the amounts, and that's for the support of regional offices for the Business Council. And so we reduced it to one office, I guess. We adopted Senate 2050A Circuit Courts. That reduced their 900 series by $27,000 and gave an expenditures limit of $543,760. We deleted and further amended on House 2048A and House 3001A education reform. That was $75,000 for the feasibility of implementing a gross system of student assessment. We deleted that to go to the final House position of no additional funding and keeping the footnote intact. On capital construction, we deleted and further amended House 2046A, changed that to $250,000 for various state fair. We just reduced that by half for the state fair capital construction project costs. That was some miscellaneous capital construction at the state fair. We adopted Senate 3016A, the capital complex construction account, added a footnote transferring $10 million general fund on the passage of Senate File 87 into the capital building rehab and restoration account that was created in that bill. We adopted House 2022A. That was $652,468 for site acquisition and
development costs for a travel center in South Cheyenne, and the state has had a private donation of some land that would accommodate that. We adopted Senate 3017A, adds language to the school capital construction account, transferring $50 million of future coal lease bonuses to the Hathaway Scholarship Fund. We adopted Senate 3017A, We deleted and further amended Senate 2049A. That was authorization to the community college dorms. We also added a footnote preventing major maintenance funds from being expended on projects contained in the appropriation. We deleted Senate 3020A capital construction, which was a list of capital construction projects for community colleges for educational buildings. In the Section 300s, we adopted Senate 2044A, changed the appropriation and assignment of study responsibility to the state treasurer, to the state auditor. That was something that was proposed here in the House a couple of times, and I was kind of finally convinced that it was an okay idea. We deleted House 3005A, the carryover for the UW School of Energy Research. We adopted Senate 2030A and adopted House 3009, extended the carryover time of the University School of Energy Resources appropriation from the 2006 laws until the 30th of June, and it was a slight language difference there. We removed the carryover for the state fair, and those CapCons are already available for expenditure until that project is completed. We deleted on local government distributions. You see a lot of deleted and further amended there. And what that did is down in the bold language there at the right at the bottom. We adopted language for an equal split of funding between the House and the Senate formulas. We added the Senate's WIOLINK language, added the Senate's language to allow SLIB to fund partially funded projects, and added the House's language to allow special districts to receive funding via the block grant process. We adopted House 2004A, Wyoming Public TV Endowment. It just established the requirements for public TV, the language. We deleted and further amended on railroad quiet zones, and if you see in the bold language there, we deleted and further amended removing the funding and added a footnote that states the Department of Transportation shall cooperate with communities in setting up railroad quiet zones. We adopted House 3008, extends the Wildlife Trust Fund Challenge account. Going on to page 3, we deleted and further amended. We adopted the House position on this amendment, deleted and further amended to accept the Department of Corrections, accept the Department of Corrections, which already has a footnote on its 100 series money directing the department regarding transfers, and what that does is keeps agencies from transferring in 100 series our salaries and benefits, and it keeps departments from transferring money from those from salaries and benefits for other purposes. We adopted the House position on NEPA review. We adopted Senate 2059 NEPA review, which was tried a couple of times in the House and failed. And that's language only, no new money. We adopted Senate 2060A, the athletics bridge loan, and that was a loan from the University of Wyoming from the UW Permanent Land Fund corpus, up to $4.3 million to be repaid not later than December 31st, 2011. And I was assured that, and I saw documents that showed that there was, and I also got legal advice that there was assurance of repayment of those funds to the corpus of the account plus interest. On elected officials, Senate 2020A and Senate 3024A, that provides $115,000 general fund for incidental expenses. Oh, and we changed that to $30,000 from $15,000. The Senate had $30,000 in there for the five elected officials. On AML funding, we deleted and further amended several amendments. The net result was that it would be funded in the same way it ended up being funded in both bodies. The further amend was necessary because both sides deleted prior amendments to get to their final positions. It would be from the funding would be from current unobligated AML money and not from the new AML money that's coming in. We didn't want to jeopardize that new flow of money. We deleted Senate 2057, deleted and further amended several amendments there on capital construction. And what it did was reduce the College of Business Construction by $771,000, and it appropriated another $800,000 general fund, an additional $1 million of Common School Permanent Land Fund reserve account monies for the Public Library Challenge Fund. We deleted and further amended 2057. Faculty endowment increase, another part of that, the 2057 Public Library Endowment Challenge Fund. The net result of all of that was that we deleted all of those amendments and then further amended to use those funding sources for the library endowment, as was the Senate position. But also we added language concerning uranium research at the School of Energy Research. No funding was included in the School of Energy Research language, only direction. And you would find that language on uranium in your report on page 26, section 331 there at the bottom. And Mr. Speaker, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Representative Stubson.
Mr. Speaker, Chairman Philp, just jumping back to on the cheat sheet, section 3, it'd be Senate Amendment 3016. The discussion about the $10 million appropriation from general fund upon passage of Senate File 87. As I go back and look at what we did to 87, it looks like we adopted a standing committee amendment that deleted $3 million of that, and then the other in the bill, the other $7 million was directed to come from the Capital Building Restoration Account. And I was just wanting just a little explanation on how if anything, what we did to Senate File 87, if that impacts what the amendment is you guys, or the what you guys agreed to on that provision.
Chairman Phil.
I'd have to go back and look at that bill, but I don't think it affects that bill, if I remember right. And I don't think it affects that bill, and if I remember the language in the bill right.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had I need a clarification on that library endowment challenge fund and how it interfaces with Senate file number 29. I think it was yesterday I read Senate file 29. It seemed like there was a $7 million or approximately appropriation involved with that one. And then there's been other flyers going around that the total appropriation that was asked for at one time was $25.5 million, and I wondered, is that being spread over a number of years, or is this just what is in the budget? I maybe that would help that, and then reconciling that other numbers.
And maybe Representative Berger can answer this. She's more familiar with that bill than I am.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The 1.8 is added, would be added to the Senate File 29 if it passed the House. The Senate File 29 had a very severe haircut over on the other side of the building, and it currently has $7.3 million in it. So it would make it a total of 9.1 if the body passed this amendment and also passed the bill. And that would just be a one-time funding to start the endowment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Members of the House, the question and the answer is you're about to vote on concurrence on an $8 million budget. We want to be sure what we're doing here. Chairman Philp.
Mr. Speaker, I'm told that last time we put $7 million in the restoration account on the Capitol Complex and $20 million in the Capitol Complex account, and then this year we took $10 million and moved it to the restoration account out of that $20 million. So that's where we are.
Further questions? Question being asked for. We are voting on Joint Conference Committee Number 1 Report to House Bill 1. A majority of the elected members are required to adopt this report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden,
aye.
Anderson,
aye.
Bagby,
aye.
Berger,
aye.
Blake,
aye.
Brechtel,
aye.
Brown,
aye.
Buchanan,
aye.
Childers,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Davison,
aye.
Dirks,
aye.
Dockstetter,
aye.
Edmonds,
aye.
Edwards,
aye.
Esquivel F,
aye.
Esquivel K,
aye.
Gilmore,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles, Hales,
aye.
Hallinan,
aye.
Hammonds,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Eichel,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jones,
aye.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lubnow,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Millen,
aye.
Olson,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
aye.
Korberg, Samuelson,
aye.
Semlick,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Simpson,
aye.
Slater,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Warren,
aye.
White,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 60 ayes.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Number 1, Report to House Bill 1, with my thanks to the Chairman and the members of the Conference Committee. Thank you very much, Chairman Phil.
Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Phil.
I would just like to thank you for all your leadership and for appointing such a great committee to help me out. And it was good. And I love you too. I still love you.
Message. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 213, Mr. Speaker, Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations. The Senate adopted the Joint Conference Committee Number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 27, noes 2, excused 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Committee announcements. Chairman Childers.
Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet Monday morning at 8 a.m. in room H10 to discuss interim topics. And just to comment on the budget, while I'm not quite as old as the good representing from District 10, I would say that I don't remember seeing a budget pass with 60 zip. So, again, congratulations.
Chairman Berger.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Your Technology and Public Relations Committee will meet at 8 a.m. on Monday morning in room 302 to discuss interim topics.
Further announcements. Chairman Phil.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Education, will meet Monday morning at 9 o'clock to discuss Senate File 29, Public Library Endowment.
Further announcements. Chairman Phil.
Mr. Speaker, I guess we're doing that tonight.
Committee number 13, Chairman Thompson. That's the Committee on Cowboys. Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to bring to your attention that in your basket on top of your desk are our courtesy fund expenses for this session. So sometime next week, if you get an opportunity, bring a check in and give it to Sharon or Sue Ann Schaefer, and it's $37.50. So, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Thompson.
Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would just like to extend again our appreciation to the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. He's done incredible amounts of work over the years that he has been chairman and as a member of that committee, and they all work hard on that committee, but the chairman has set such a fine example and by working all the time, as far as I can tell, and I really appreciate your efforts and your sacrifices to do the job. So if we could one more time give our thanks to the chairman. Yay! Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You have a general file list for Monday. There are a few more bills in committees, and those will come out and be read in Monday morning, and I think we'll be able to get to pretty much everything unless we get bogged down. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. on Monday morning, March 3rd, 2008.
You have heard the motion. All of those in favor of the motion signal. Representative Childers.
Mr. Speaker, since there's a conference committee meeting upon adjournment, I just want to let everybody know that's interested in coming to that meeting. They are not adjourned on the other end. In fact, they're just now in concurrencies, so they'll be a while. But I think there's at least two members in here need to hang around.
Thank you. Now you have heard the motion. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. All those opposed to the motion say no. We are adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, March 3rd.